the kids would make fun of me because they were like, what is this? Like, yeah. You think you're like some black kid from the Bronx. You're a white kid from the, you're a white Jewish kid from the suburbs, you know, get over it. It's so hard to have a passion in any, about anything, right, in this world. And if you see it, especially in a child, like, embrace it. But I do think that is a mark of success, as somebody who's just confident in who they are and doesn't have to brag and doesn't have to try to make other people like them, is just they know who they are. So I'm happy to say that I probably found my main passion, at least for the moment, by accident in podcasting, you know? One thing I've started to do lately is say no to things. I used to never say no to anything. Like any writing assignment I would get, I would just take it because it's like, who am I to say no? I need to work. I need to make money. So I just love doing it. So whether I get paid or not, I feel like, again, my dad's advice, follow your passion and the money will come.
Hey guys, and welcome back to the I Love Success podcast. Our mission is to help 10 million people in 10 years to achieve their dreams. I can't do it myself, but let's do it together. Help me by being the best version of yourself and do something with your life. Today I'm here with Jonathan Small, an award-winning journalist, producer, and podcast host based in Los Angeles. He's the founder of Write About Media, a writing consultancy service, and his podcast, Write About Now, features interviews with successful writers and editors. Jonathan is also editor-in-chief of greenentrepreneur.com, a business site focused on the cannabis industry, and a regular contributor to The New York Times, TV Guide, Cosmo, Details, and Good Housekeeping. In short, he's just awesome. Let's welcome Jonathan Small. Welcome, Jonathan.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, how was the drive today in Los Angeles?
It was very interesting. It took a trip that probably should have taken 30 minutes, took about an hour and a half, but it was fine. I enjoy the rain. I like, it gives me a chance to catch up on my work and listen to podcasts and make phone calls.
Wonderful. Yeah, and the reason we are here, we met at the meetup for podcasters, and I really felt that we were sitting right next to each other and I didn't know you, but you felt like a good friend. It seems like, I don't know you, but it seems like you had a good heart. And I said, I want to share this story because it's so interesting to meet people that are doing something that they love and still manages to keep like being yourself, which is not always easy. And I think that is honorable, and we're going to talk more about that, and also more about that being hard on yourself, which I think is a trait of a lot of successful people, which is, I don't know if it's good or bad, but we can explore that later. But let's start with Jonathan as a kid. Where did you grow up, and when did you start falling in love with the words?
Well, I grew up in New York City up until I was about 10 years old. I don't have a lot of memories of New York City but at that time in my life. But I do always remember, my father was a pretty well-known film composer, musician. And he did movies like Marathon Man. His name was Michael Small. He's not with us anymore. He did movies like Marathon Man, included all these big movies. So my life was always surrounded by music. There was just music always coming, you know, from the corridors. My father always playing the piano. Woke up really early, would play the piano. I could hear him playing. And he was also a great lover of books, and he was always reading. I was read to a lot. He was always talking to me about books that he was reading. I think the two things he liked to do the most was make music and read books. As far as writing goes, you know, I didn't really know. I wish I had one of those stories where I could just say, oh, you know, I just couldn't stop writing from the time I was 10 years old. You know, I wasn't really like that. I had a lot of interest when I was a kid. One of the things that I think sets me apart and was a little bit different is that I was, from a very young age, I grew up right outside New York City. And from a very young age, I was fascinated by hip hop. And I'm 51, so I'm a little older than a lot of these people that that got into hip hop. So I was there from the very beginning. And when I say I was there, I was in New York, but I'm not exactly like growing up on the streets of the Bronx and, you know, doing that stuff. But I was fascinated. But I listened to it, and I was really one of the few people, white guys from the suburbs, that was really listening to it at that time. And I was fascinated with it and like became obsessed with writing raps. And so I think my sort of early introduction to writing was like writing these little raps that I would write for myself. I had this nickname named Kid Finesse.
Oh.
And I would put myself in all my raps. And I was a DJ. I learned how to DJ. I taught myself how to DJ. I bought a Radio Shack mixer and was doing all this stuff. None of all my friends thought I was crazy because at that time rap was like not cool.
Did you wear FUBU? And
I wasn't that bad. I was more like a rapper in my head. I don't think I had the guts to be really cool and to wear FUBU. And then, by the way, this was pre-FUBU. This was like my Adidas. I have my Adidas shirt on today. Yeah. I feel now I'm embracing my hip hop self a little bit more than I usually do, than I did back when I was a kid. Because I was sort of almost like, I was very proud of it that I knew about it, but I was also like, the kids would make fun of me because they were like, what is this? Like, you think you're like some black kid from the Bronx, you're a white kid from the, you're a white Jewish kid from the suburbs, you know, get over it. But I was really into it. So I was really into music and writing.
Did you rap yourself as well?
I did. I had this like voice. I did all these raps and I recorded raps with my friends. I had a friend that was a musician and he's actually gone on to become a pretty famous musician. I don't know if I should out him, but this guy, Adam Schlesinger, and he would put down this tracks and we would rap, and it was so fun.
That's amazing.
And so that was beginning of writing. And then I went to a school where they had something called composition, which was every Monday we had to write for 1 hour. We just had to sit down, and those little marble composition books you see sometimes are very old school. We'd all have to sit down. We would be given a topic, and then we just have to write freehand for 1 hour about it, and then hand it into the teacher. And it really forced me to have to write. You know, I mean, like, it was kind of an amazing practice, and I think that was when I discovered that I liked writing. I never was really sure I wanted to be a writer, but I knew that I liked to write, and it was always an option.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. And if we just stop a little bit and talk about that, when you fell in love with hip-hop as a young kid, and living in the suburbs, a white kid, Jewish kid, and all of a sudden you are falling in love in a different type of music, which I think is so beautiful. Can you just talk about how did that, did you feel different? Or how did people treat you? Because I think this is a problem that we have in today's world, right? Maybe in a city like Los Angeles, you have the right to express yourself in any way because there's such a big diversity, but it's not like that everywhere. In small cities with different cultures, it's sometimes that's hard, and you felt that. Can you just talk about that, and what type of advice would you give to another white kid loving hip hop or maybe the opposite, you know?
I mean look I in some ways that is one of the regrets of my life. I mean, we talked about, you know, talk about our successes and our failures. You know, when I was really interested in hip-hop and writing raps and stuff, my family, my parents, who are the most liberal people you could ever imagine, they were hippies, you know, they weren't that into it. They were like, oh, you're much smarter than this. You know, my dad is a Harvard educated, you know, classically trained. And he's like, you know, you're bigger than this. That's like, you know, street music, blah, blah. And it wasn't racist as much as it was just like they didn't understand it at all.
Yeah.
And they actually kind of, they weren't always so encouraging. I think they've been encouraging throughout my life, but at that time in my life, they weren't. And then, as I said, like, the kids in school were all listening to like heavy metal and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I embraced it and I loved it, but I didn't, I almost feel like, you know, if I could have had it over, maybe I would have pursued it more in terms of being a producer or in terms of like trying to be a DJ. These were all things I was so interested in. In college, I had a radio show called the Finesse Radio, in which I was like this character, Kid Finesse, and I'd come on and I'd say, you know, hey, it's Kid Finesse, and welcome back. And I'd do this whole routine and play all the newest hip-hop music. And where I went to college in New London, Connecticut, there were no hip-hop radio stations, so I was the only source of hip-hop for these kids in the projects and stuff. And they would come up to the station, and they'd be like, where's Kid Finesse? And I'd be like, I'm Kip. They never expected it to be me, right? The last person you would ever expect to be a hip-hop DJ.
Wow.
So I was really into it, but I didn't have a lot of encouragement to, you know, one of the things as I'm raising a child now, one of the things that I'm trying to do a little bit differently is if I see somebody that has a passion, my child thankfully has a lot of passion, one of my kids, Elijah, has a tremendous passion for music, to really encourage it and to nurture it. And even if it might not be like mainstream, like, it's so hard to have a passion about anything, right, in this world. And if you see it, especially in a child, like, embrace it. Like, he'll make the best of it. Even if it isn't something that you see as being like the perfect path for your kid or for your friend, like, just to have a passion, as long as you're not hurting anybody. Yeah. I just think, so my advice to myself at 18 years old would be, you know, don't worry about what everybody else thinks. This is what you love to do, and continue to do it. So I have kind of come back and rediscovered sort of hip hop and my rap roots kind of later in my life, and have become less sort of weirded out by it or feeling like there's something not good about it. Yeah. But it took me a while. Like, it was a big impact.
I think it's tricky. I remember back in where I grew up in a small town, there were a couple of guys who wanted to do hip hop and even other type of music artists, and people made fun of them. You know, there was one guy who like really wanted to do hip hop, and they were kind of, oh, who do you think you are? You're not from the ghetto, or like, right. and then another guy was a DJ, and people used at a small little bar, like for 10 people, people used to make fun of him, and then he got this song that got so famous, and then everybody, oh wow,
yeah.
Why do you think it is that people, in the beginning, they won't encourage you, but once you succeeded, they will like be on your side? What's up with that, you know?
I don't know. It's the psychology of people of not, you know, of wanting you to follow the herd, and people don't want you to necessarily be different, and everybody wants sort of, it makes them feel more comfortable if you're the same. I know, you know, from, I can understand from maybe some of my parents, perspective, maybe like they wanted me to, you know, follow a path that they thought would be maybe financially lucrative for me or, you know, stable for me. And they saw that as maybe not being something. And again, I don't want to put this all on my parents, because I also think that we control our own destinies and we make the decisions, right? And so, you know, it's not, you know, I can understand where they were coming from. What I wish that I had known back then is that if you really believe in something and you're really passionate about it, don't worry about what anybody else thinks. You know, I spent so much of my life worrying about what other people thought about what I was doing. And as a wiser 51-year-old man now, I'm like, what do I care? I could care less now. But, you know, it seems so important when you're 20 years old, 18 years old, what other people think. And I just wish that I had known that back then. Yeah.
I think that's super, super difficult, because we all, like, as I told you before we started, this is episode 103, where I really dig deep into people's, like, heart and soul. And
I wish it was in episode two.
I know, right? So I'm trying to get better at this and really talk about the things that matters, mm-hmm. that we don't talk about every day. And one thing that I realized by interviewing and having conversation with all these amazing people just like you is that we all just want to be loved.
Yeah.
We want to feel appreciated for what we do. And sometimes, especially successful people, have a bigger drive to be accepted. And that's why they are pursuing this like wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that? Or like?
I do agree with that. I think there's good and bad in that. I do think that when I've met other successful people in my life, and thank you for calling me successful. It's funny, because I don't think successful people sometimes think that they're successful, right? Yeah. There's always somebody better or doing something more than they, you know, for anybody. But thank you for that accomplishment. But yeah, as far as success, I mean, I think, so wait, what was your question? Now I went off on a tangent. Your question was, why do successful people...
Do you agree with that people that are usually have a drive or accomplish something have a bigger need to feel loved and accepted than other people?
I do think that creative people tend to be a bit insecure and do want the acknowledgement of other people, because it's all you really feel like you have in the beginning. Like, you know, when you get up on stage, I was really into acting when I was in college, and I think probably because I love the sort of immediate response of the audience and the way that felt. You know, writing is a funny thing, because you don't get it's actually a funny career for me to have chosen, because you actually don't get that immediate response. In fact, you very rarely get any response. You know, you write something, you send it. Maybe your editor says, hey, this was pretty good. But most likely they don't say anything. They're just like, thanks. Yeah. You know, I remember being on a subway and a crowded New York City subway. And I saw some guy reading, at the time I was working at Maxim magazine, and I saw a guy reading my article. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, that's like the equivalent of, you know, being on stage in front of 100 people with this one guy. And I, you know, I don't know. I'm looking at his face. I'm like, does he like it? Is he laughing? You know, and then he kind of turned the page. I was like, no, you know, but you don't get that feedback, you know, as a writer. So, I think that's probably why I get so many writers to come on my podcast, because they actually get to have an interaction with another human being and, and get to, you know, talk about what they do. But yeah, I think that we are all probably as humans driven by this need to make, to be loved and to be approved of. And maybe that comes, you know, I don't want to get too Freudian or psychological, but it probably maybe comes from wanting that love from your parents or other important people in your life. It's not, I don't think it's a positive, necessarily a positive thing, because I don't think that's the reason to be alive, is to get other people to like you. You know, otherwise you know, if that's the measure of your success, if people like me a lot, you know, first of all, it's never going to be satisfying, because it'll never be enough. Look at our president. I don't want to get too political, but you know, it's never enough. So yeah.
No, I totally agree. And I mean, that's what we're trying to do here, is redefining success, because being successful doesn't have to be that you're a New York Times bestseller, or that you're Michael Jackson or Michael Jordan or whatever. It's not always about that. For me, those are all great things, but what is really being successful? What is that? And I'm still researching this, but my feeling is that it is to be happy and to feel loved and enjoy your family and have a life where you control your days in a good way.
Yeah.
And, but people still are dependent on you, and you're dependent on people, but in a way you feel that happiness and you're not overwhelmed with anything.
Right.
But that is something I think we all strive for, but it's hard to be super successful in one area and have this as well. Mm-hmm. But I think life comes in seasons, and you have to be aware that only pursuing one career to be the best at that and neglecting your health, neglecting your family, neglecting other types of things in your life that are important is not going to lead you to happiness. You might be the best writer, but if you really want to be successful and have a balance in your life, you have to find that balance. Maybe I'm doing this for 3 years, but I'm never going to forget. At least at Thanksgiving and Christmas, I'm going to visit my parents. And don't say no, like have that character, which is super hard.
Yeah, I think society has so much put success on a sort of monetary success or status. And, you know, there's a reason that so many of those people that are that you think are very successful are so miserable in real life. You know, not a happy people, not good parents. You know, you read, you know, you somebody like a Steve Jobs, who, you know, I admire, but like was a terrible dad, you know, and was not a particularly good husband. And so it really is, you know, how do you measure success? How, when you pass away, do you want people to talk about you, or do you want to be remembered? You know, as is it more important that, oh yeah, he made a ton of money, or is it more important that he was such a great friend, he was such a great father, I always felt happy when I was in his presence, I felt, you know, I mean, what you said about that was such a nice thing to say. I mean, that would be, to me, a mark of a successful person, that when you met me, you felt like I had a positive energy and stuff, and I would want, you know, me to say, I felt similar about you, that you obviously had something like a sort of like a, you know, you can tell when somebody's trying too hard to get people to like them, and when somebody's just confident in who they are.
Yeah.
And it's taken me a long time to be confident in who I am, and I still work at it. But I do think that is a mark of success, is somebody who's just confident in who they are and doesn't have to brag and doesn't have to try to make other people like them. It's just they know who they are, you know?
Yeah, I think that's so true. And thank you for sharing that. And I think also, if you don't have a passion, do the things you do with the passion, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
do go all in. I mean, even if you have a job that's a little bit boring, or you're a receptionist at a boring job, yeah, but you can be nice to people.
Yeah.
We have a security guard down here, Juan. I mean, he's the nicest guy ever. He talks to everyone. He has the best personality ever.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's probably going to either is going to love his job for the rest of his life, or he's going to be a super good leader or something like that, just because he's doing it. And then you have people that are like, oh, I hate going to my job today. So, I know.
Yeah.
But try to do something like smile and be good at it, because it's a little bit more fun then, right?
Yeah, I think be in the moment. I mean, one of the things I'm sort of learning later is, like, you know, we spend so much time worrying about the future and, like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And, you know, I think what John Lennon said, you know, life happens while we plan for the future. And it's totally true that we spend most of the time, you know, thinking about the ahead and, like, what is my passion? Instead of being like, maybe right now, like, I'm going to learn my passion. Maybe today something is going to happen that is going to spark my interest. And look, I don't want to give the impression that I haven't spent times at horrible jobs sitting there bored out of my mind or just hating my boss and just being like, why am I here? And I think that those moments are actually good moments. You know, looking back, when you're in them, they're horrible. There's nothing worse than being sort of unhappy in a terrible situation, feeling like you're in a dead end job. But if you look at it another way, like you say, this too shall pass, it motivates you sometimes to get out of that situation. If you really embrace where you are, even how horrible it is, then it maybe will motivate you to find something different. So I think even the bad times can be something that are going to drive you to your passion. You know, like, I know a lot of people say the goal in life is to be happy, and of course everybody loves to be happy, but I don't think that that's all of living. I think there is some sadness in living, and there is some controversy, and it does, and I, you know, nobody wants to stay in those places, but I do think that you haven't really lived life unless you have had those failures. I mean, there's a reason that every expert or successful person in the world will say, embrace failure. Like, failure is a good thing. That's like I know it's cliched at this point, but there is some truth to it, right? Yeah. But when you're failing, it isn't fun. I hate failing.
Yeah. You know? I know. And I was just listening to a podcast the other day with a guy. He's like devoted his life to study successful athletes and finding tools for mental preparations and mindset training. And one of the things that he was talking about is that we shouldn't be afraid of problems, because that is actually strengthening you as a person and your mind. Just like going to the gym, you lift heavier to become stronger.
Yeah.
If you're grown up in an environment where everything is always perfect, when the shit hits the fan, and it always will, it's going to be hard to handle that.
Yeah.
But people who have had a lot of failures and problems in their life, they almost like shrug it away. Yo, we'll solve this. And I mean, so embrace that, even if it's super easy to say, no one wants problems, but it's actually helping you as a human being.
Yeah. If you can step back during a problem and just ask yourself, like, what is this problem? What is it? Why is it presenting itself to me? And what can I get out of, you know, solving this problem? I mean, I remember being, you know, just hating my boss at one situation and just being so going to work and just being like, I can't do it anymore. I can't, you know, that feeling. And I just remember like stepping back and being like, what are you learning from this experience? One of the things you're learning is you don't really like working that much for somebody else. And maybe you should start thinking about a career path where you actually don't have to report into somebody, even if that person is amazing. You know, maybe you should work for yourself. I had worked for other people for most of my career, and I sort of had that realization. I don't know if I purposely started working for myself, but it became something that was more in my awareness and sort of manifested itself eventually that I'm just working for myself. And I don't know if I could ever work for somebody again, although if somebody wants to offer me a really good job. but you know, I never thought of myself as an entrepreneur, and here I am now running an entrepreneur magazine. So it's just, I think those problems, you don't really change and have realizations unless there's friction in some way. Yeah. It's the nature of life. It stinks because, you know, I wish life were just one of these things where everything is happy and you just move and you just advance in life and everything is good. But no, it's like, it's hard.
It is. It is. And I mean, compared to, and we're still living in the best moment in time with technology. We're safe. I mean, imagine 200 years ago.
Oh, like, my God.
I mean, we're sitting here. It's warm. We have water. I mean, and still.
Like, what are our problems, right?
Yeah, I know,
compared to like,
But the mind doesn't work that way, unfortunately. No. So it sees the problems that we have in front of us. But let's talk about your company, Right About Media. When did you decide to start that and like, kind of what are you doing and how
I mean, I started out of a problem, out of a necessity. I had been laid off at a few jobs, and I say laid off, wasn't fired. What happened was I had transitioned from writing and being an editor to digital media and to being actually a producer of digital videos. And I had worked at the Game Show Network, and I had worked at this company called Dance On. And I was suddenly transitioning from, again, I've kind of rewritten my career a few times, and I've had to just because of the marketplace. And I had been, but those digital media jobs, as we all know, sometimes they don't always monetize. They can't, you know, companies can't figure out how to make money off of them. And so, you know, both times it was a situation where there was just, they had to basically let me go because I didn't, because the company wasn't making enough money off of what the, you know, that my department was doing. Yeah. So, and it's hard, you know, I have kids, I have mortgage, I have all these things. And I was finding it harder and harder to find like a full-time job with all this stuff, with my age, with the salary that I needed. And so sort of out of necessity, I was like, well, what are my skills? I kind of stepped back. Like, what do I like to do? And what, you know, and one of the things I had done throughout my career was ghostwrite for people. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's very much like what we're doing now, where I would sit down with somebody who is not a writer but wants to write a book, and we would have a conversation for days and days and days, and I would take notes and record it, and then I would put it into a book. And I liked it, you know, provided that the person I was working with was a cool person. I really actually enjoyed doing that. So I had this idea to start a writing consultancy company, and that's Write About Now Media. And as I said, that sort of evolved, that precipitated the podcast, which we'll talk about later. But I still do that. But it's funny, it's even morphing and becoming different things. Like Write About Now was supposed to be this writing consultancy company, but now it's sort of become also my podcast and media company, and it's gotten me some jobs producing other people's podcasts. Yeah. So it doesn't have like one purpose. It's sort of like, this is me, these are all the things I can offer you, and if you want me to help you write a book, I can help you write a book. If you want me to help you produce a podcast, I can help you with that. So it's kind of like, it's not one thing, and that's one thing I'm trying to figure out is like, what should it be? You know, what do I want it to be?
Yeah. Are you happy with who you are now?
No, I'll never be happy with who I am. I am happier. Can we say that?
Yeah.
I think that I'm probably happier with who I am now than I've ever been in my life, which is a good sign. And I think a lot of it has to do with just, you know, being a little bit more or feeling a little bit more in control of what I'm interested in, doing what I'm interested in every day, and not sort of trying to be somebody else for somebody else.
I think also we need to know that like we are enough, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes we forget that because we're thinking I was a world medalist, and I was thinking, oh, when I get to that level, it's gonna be amazing.
Yeah.
It is an amazing experience, but let's face it, doesn't change who you are. It's
not really.
It changed maybe how people interact with you in that given moment because you have that accomplishment, but you still have to live with yourself.
Yeah.
If you're
fleeting, right?
Yeah, if you're a douchebag, you're going to be a douchebag.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's...
Moments, like you think you want them all your whole life, and then they come, and you're like, they're great for a moment, and then they're over, and then it's kind of like you just go back to life the way it was, right? And I think sometimes we try so hard to like... I mean, I went through a little period where I wanted to be famous, you know, and it's like, oh, if I'm just famous, that would be, you know, this is when I was much younger. But, you know, look at people who are famous, how miserable they are. Also, like, it's never enough. Like, you're famous one day and you're not, and then you want to be famous, you know, like, I think those are not the things that are going to make you a satisfied and happy person in life, ultimately, like, those little moments. In fact, I thought for so long, all I want in my life is for people, you know, to love what I do and to like tell me, you know, be impressed with like what I do for a living. And now that people are, I'm kind of like almost embarrassed by it. Like I don't really actually want that as much. Like I don't want people telling me how great I am. Like it doesn't make me feel better. So it's like you think you want these things and you don't even want them, you know?
I know. I think like it could be nice, but most importantly, self-development and how, who are you as
human being? Who are you? I think that is the most important. I am definitely learning in my life that if you're not happy with who you are and don't know who you are and what you value and what is important to you, then all these things that you set for yourself is like that. Oh, if I only do that, I'll be happy. It won't mean, it's like eating junk food. It feels good at that moment, but then you have a stomach, you know, later, you know.
Oh, you're so right. And one last question, something that I ask all my guests is, If you can tell the listeners right after this podcast to go ahead and do something to get a little bit closer to their passion, their dream, or just make a change in their life, what could they do right now?
Right now. Just be present. Try to do, here's a little thing that I've been trying to do lately. Don't listen to the news. Don't look at your phone. Just try it for like 2 or 3 hours and just try to be like really present and aware and observing what's going on, you know, in life, who you are, what your friends are saying, and really listen to what people are saying. One of the things that podcasting has taught me is how to listen, because to be a good podcaster, you have to be a good listener. You're a good listener. You hear what I say, you come back to it. A lot of times when you hear people interview somebody, they don't listen. They just sort of have their questions ready and they're not really listening. Yeah. So, you know, observe and listen, and you will be amazed when you're actually listening how much you hear and how much you had been missing. And turn it off just for a minute. I know it's hard because whatever, for work, we have to be connected so much, but I would say try that and see what, you know, even if it's just for 3 hours, and just see what happens.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much, Jonathan, for doing this.
Oh, yeah. My God, it was my pleasure. What a great interesting conversation. Thank you for making me have to think more about stuff than I normally do.
Yeah, no, I love talking to you, and I learned a lot, and it was interesting to follow your journey from this kid finesse in New London, Connecticut, all the way to Los Angeles. You're a father now, you're a husband, you're a writer, podcast holds you, all these amazing things, but you're a human being, and... that's so amazing. And thank you to all our listeners that are, without you, we couldn't do this. And that's why we're here, to share, so to get into your mind so you can create a little bit better life for yourself. We truly appreciate you. And if you want more of what we are doing, you should sign up for our newsletter. We will also get a couple of free chapters of my book, The Goal Book. So just visit ilsuccess.com, sign up to make sure to always get our podcast and just be part of our journey, because I want to help 10 million people in 10 years and I can't do it myself. We need to create this tribe. We need to share. We need to help. Yeah, that's it for today, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.